Hi, welcome to The Project of You, a podcast where an everyday normal person, me,
and a relationship expert and psychotherapist, Azita.
Yes, you got it. And we have a special guest.
That's today. I was like, because this is the first time we're having guests in our podcast. So welcome, Alinda.
Welcome. Very special guest, Alinda Small. Welcome. Alinda is an incredible relationship counselor and psychosexual therapist with degrees in psychology, medical science, and sexual health. Welcome, Alinda. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And interesting for our listeners, Alinda and myself, we share university.
We studied together.
We studied together. We're sitting next to each other and
share the pain.
I feel very outnumbered here right now. I'm like in a lion's den with two amazing therapists.
I'm looking forward to this podcast. As usual, so this is just giving you guys some extra information and tools to use at home, but for a proper diagnosis, if you need to see a professional, please go ahead or contact us on my website, www.theprojectofyou.com.au.
Yes.
And we'll share Alinda's information with you all as well. So
absolutely. So, sex therapy.
Yes.
That is very fun. And I'm really glad we're talking about this on a Monday morning. In an office where people are probably walking outside and we're talking about porn and intimacy.
I already had a few phone calls today from clients, obviously guys, want to make an appointment that they had fight with their partner over the weekend.
Yeah.
So Monday is the day.
Monday's a busy day.
Yes, yeah. To talk about relationship and sex.
I know, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your work, because it's very fascinating to me.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's really fascinated about the sex therapy.
Yeah.
Part of it, right? That's kind of it. So the truth is a lot of it's relationship counseling because really a lot of dysfunction, sexual dysfunction is associated to relationship. If you're not in a relationship, it's really often not a problem.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is relationship counseling as well. And then the sex therapy is probably quite different to what people expect it to be.
Yes.
Trauma, that there's been horrible trauma that's happened. It's a lot of psychosomatic dysfunction, which is a lot of erectile dysfunction, premature ejaculation, delayed ejaculation.
Yeah.
For women, vaginismus, which can be primary, secondary. It can be from trauma, but it can also just be appearing with no obvious signs to a woman.
Wow.
And so they live with it with some sort of history around it. And so it's kind of quite medicalized, a lot of the sex therapy.
Yeah.
It's trips and that said, you do also have to have those conversations with couples about, you know, how you spice things up and you're bored, our libido is mismatched, you know, there's sort of a desire drop for a lot of women in particular going through menopause. So it kind of has lots of facets, but a lot of it is really part of the relationship as well. And so it's kind of varied.
And you said some women have vaginismus?
Vaginismus.
What is that?
Yeah, so vaginismus is basically when the sort of vulva and vaginal opening lock completely. And so some women can't put, you know, a Q-tip, Q-tip in.
Yeah.
Some can. Some can put a tampon in, others can't. But sex, no matter what, is painful for them.
And is that psychosomatic or is that just like a physical...
It's first chicken egg, right? So psychosomatic, it happens and you get a very strong tightening of the muscles. And so then that ends up being a problem in itself.
Yeah.
Right? So there's not only the psychological side, there's the physiological side.
Yeah,
yeah. So often, you know, therapy and intervention with the physio is a good thing. But also that is really a fine line because they're terrified of being touched anyway. And so very slowly you go through the process of it.
I have a couple of clients actually with that issue. One of them is they've been married 20 years.
Yeah.
Almost 7 years, no sex.
Yeah.
With adult children, and that's the issue. And then I have a younger couple actually that it's been 4 years married, no sex.
Yeah.
So she's a still virgin, and so I exactly recommended what you recommended to them. But it's my question from you is that I find out with my clients that they will have difficulty to explain this to their partner. So what it is, you know, the partners, obviously it's frustrated.
Yeah.
It's, they think it's, what have I done?
Yeah.
So what would you recommend to this, to
yeah.
couples?
Well, it's a really big part of it, isn't it? Because first of all, you've got a presenting problem that doesn't make sense for a lot of people. They can't
yeah.
work this out. Like, what's the matter with me?
I didn't even know it was a
yeah.
thing at all.
Yeah.
So I imagine a lot of people would struggle.
Absolutely. Yeah. So statistically, we know that women don't come forward. They suffer in silence.
Yeah.
Because if you look at this sort of correlation between a lot of women, it's got to do with their upbringing, their religious backgrounds, a really big thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't have this kind of familiarity with their body often.
Yeah.
And so they think of anything touching themselves as dirty. Sex is only for procreation.
Mm.
So
mm.
often there's that picture. But then there's the opposite, that it's nothing apart from being disappointed in a relationship and having this kind of response.
Mm.
So it's really, it's kind of complex until you get them in the room. And then once you start working with them, it moves relatively well
yeah.
if they're on board.
Would you say that sexuality is more psychologically and emotionally entwined for women than it is for men? Or would you say that it's equal?
Well, there's all this research now, right?
Yeah.
That's being done for the first time that was never done before because
yeah.
it's a man's world, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And nothing was about female pleasure.
At all.
Right? It was a lot
it's
of
bad.
Male.
Don't talk
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
exactly
yeah.
right. Like, you just kind of, nope. So now it's having a real shift. And so there's women like Emily Nagoski, who wrote a book, Come As You Are, which is a really big TED talk that she gave. And then that sort of followed through. Kelly Kasperson, who's an American neurologist who's working a lot in sexual health. So they're starting to see a shift. And so what we know is our context as women is vital for us.
Yeah.
And so we have, and I'll kind of keep it a bit simple. So we've kind of got top-down processing, which is, you know, you see and then it processes and you get a physiological response.
Yeah.
Right? Women only have that sexually. We only have our brain connected to our response.
Wow.
Men have both. They have top-down and bottom-up processing.
Wow.
Right? So they can touch themselves.
Yeah.
Get a response, even if they're not thinking
even
about
if they're
it.
In the worst state psychologically.
We don't.
Yeah,
wow.
we have to get ready for
yeah.
it.
And
yeah.
this is the biggest, our brain, the biggest sex organ that we have. And so our context is really important. So it's not just like, hey, I feel like being intimate. It's like, do I like myself?
Wow.
Do I like my partner?
Yeah.
Are you saying that women using their brain
more?
Of course. And that's not to simplify
use
men,
them.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that was just a joke.
But we know context is very important for women.
Yeah.
And so if we're not thinking something, and we also know women don't tend to like porn as much as men because we like to build a story and a narrative.
Well,
yeah.
this is, well, I think women would like porn if more women made porn.
Yeah. With a story.
With a story.
Yeah.
Because the story is abysmal.
Yeah,
the
romantic story.
Yeah,
yeah.
It
has to
yeah.
be romantic.
And that's
well.
What women like. So, you know, Bridgerton is really big for women.
Yeah,
you
sexually,
know, those,
yeah.
Right? So those kind of suggestive things are very much in the, you know, the psychology of females
yeah.
responding, not something graphic in your face as much.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of porn, there are some experts that really warn against it. And then there's others that think it could be a helpful tool. Where do you stand on it? Do you think porn can be really damaging for people to have a healthy relationship to sex?
Yeah, so this is a really big area, and so I've been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so porn itself is not bad.
Yeah.
Right? But if porn is all you're looking at, it wires your brain very differently. And there's
Absolutely.
A really great line, which I think is fantastic, in like a fine needle, out like a fish hook. Right?
Wow.
Put it in, getting it out is really hard.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
So it's a really big problem for young men now.
Absolutely.
The numbers are really pretty confronting, right? Most young men start looking at porn at 9 years of age.
Unfortunately.
Right?
Yeah.
You shouldn't even be exposed to imagery like that.
If I show you the scan of a brain that has been addicted to porn and a scan of a brain that has been addicted to cocaine, you see the brain in cocaine is better than the brain on
porn.
Oh, no. Porn.
Because porn now as well, I mean, it used to be you'd go onto your PC and download it, but now young kids
it's
have access to it on their phones,
it's
and
faster.
The platforms are designed almost the way social media is designed, where there is the scrolling and the it's addictive.
Well, it is.
Absolutely.
It's the
incredibly
dopamine
addictive.
Cycle, which is our addictive cycle.
Yeah.
So you get a really big dopamine hit from porn.
Mm.
And
yeah.
remember, those sites are designed to keep delivering it.
Yeah.
Right? You don't like one, there's another. You know, two, three things, and then that's that escalation.
Yeah.
So I'm not against porn.
Yeah.
But I know in my practice, there's a lot of porn-induced erectile dysfunction.
Wow.
And for the first time, 3 years ago, the Urological Association presented a paper at their conference on it. For the first time, it's been acknowledged.
Yeah.
So we know it's a problem. So my answer to that is, it's okay in moderation when it's mixed with the real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Yes.
And I mean, ideally not at 9 years of age, but that's a whole other issue right now. We were talking about...
And I think so. I just add something else there. Especially if you're in a relationship, this is something that it's good that if you discuss it with your partner.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes clients are complaining that they are in bed and the husband is
outside
watching porn in bed.
Next to them,
in bed, watching porn.
Mm.
And then the next day, the guy says, why my wife is upset or not talking to me. Mm. So,
And then she doesn't want to have sex now because she found that. So, and then now he's like, well, the women on my phone love having sex all the time. Why don't you love having sex all the time?
Yes.
So it creates that.
It gives that
unrealistic
expectation.
And speaking of phones, I mean, social media and mobile phones have impacted every single aspect of our lives, sometimes positively and sometimes very negatively. From your perspective, what are some ways that you've noticed an impact on emotional and physical intimacy?
Well, I mean, where do I start with mobile phones, right?
Yeah.
Where do I start?
Because in bed,
we're all
at night.
Charge as well.
You know, like the menage a trois you don't want. So it's a couple of
the three-way, absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's not just the relationship, it's the intimacy, it's the idea of being present. They did studies and they had a sort of control group that didn't have phones, and the test group had phones out on the table.
Yeah.
The dialogue with the people with the phone, even sitting
just
there face
sitting there.
Down, reduced their vulnerability and connection.
Yeah.
And you know, I talk about it, as I'm sure you do, every day.
Yes.
Get rid of your mobile phones. Don't always be on them. Put them aside.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a massive
connect
impact.
With each other than with your mobile.
Because
Dr. Jordan Peterson says you have to have 90 minutes, like a proper discussion with your partner. Is this per day or per week? Like it's
Per day, I imagine.
Per day, 90
per day,
minutes
per day. He does that.
I do that.
He dances with his wife for like 2 hours.
I love that though.
So I think it's a cumulative is the kind of idea that you should do a minimum 20 minutes each day.
Yes.
Because it's attainable.
Yeah.
90 might be a bit tricky.
I do. I need to. I can talk underwater. So
but you
I need
are
to.
Different.
I need to like. He doesn't need to talk back. He needs to just sit there and maintain eye contact with me while I info dump. And that's just
and
that's
nod.
That's
nod
the relationship.
And, well,
and it's like you don't need your phone. You've got live entertainment right here. I'm like enacting all the articles that I've read and all the videos that I saw. So now you get a live action role playing of it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But you know, I know they say. Being on your phone before bed can disrupt your sleep and disrupt your cortisol levels. But we also don't think about how that time before bed for couples is usually when we're talking and then intimacy happens organically.
Yeah.
But now we're scrolling shoulder to shoulder and then we go to bed.
Yeah. And even if there is an advance for intimacy, you haven't been speaking. So females
like, can't just jump into it.
What?
Yeah.
Like, there's no
where's the warm up? And realistically, I've just been reading horrifying articles or seeing videos of sad puppies, or now I'm completely disrupted. I'm not in the headspace.
You were talking about warm up. What do you suggest for warm up? Like, how long do you think the warm up is?
Well, I can give you numbers on that.
Okay.
And so the research says women need a minimum of 20 minutes. Before we're ready for any form of penetration.
I'm sure that is going to be very shocking for some people.
Well, not many people, I think, get that.
I think people have 1 minute max.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And even that gets shortcut.
Yeah.
But
here
Carell,
it comes.
Well, and that leads to other things. But you know, Esther Perel has this really great line, and she was asked, how long should foreplay be? And she said, from one lovemaking session to the next. That's your foreplay.
Wow.
I love that.
I love that.
What I recommend to my husband and other clients is
be nice.
You start from a kiss on the forehead first thing in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then some days when I get a kiss in my forehead, I say, damn it.
No, it's coming.
Of the day.
But that is so
so
true.
A kiss on the forehead first thing in the morning, then you prepare. partner, you're a woman for a good night.
I think connection,
a connection, absolutely. A connection without, at the time,
without the intention.
Yeah, the expectation.
Yeah.
That the expectation is like, what now?
If I start kissing long and passionately, it means sex. And we know that's a big
Another, another one which I recommend to my clients is the 6 second kiss.
Which is a Gottman.
What's the 6 second kiss?
6 seconds. So you make sure every day you, well, obviously a few times will be great, but even once, Dr. Gottman was saying, hold a kiss for 6 seconds.
Yeah.
From the, like a, from lip
no
to
tongue,
lip.
No tongue, just lips. But
just that's... lips to lip, 6 seconds.
Okay.
That will guarantee your, you know, you will have that, that
the intimacy.
The intimacy will be alive. Wow. Yes.
That's interesting.
And it has a physiological response too.
Absolutely.
That you have more nerve endings on your lips and your fingertips than anywhere else in your body. And so when you touch on the lips, you cognitively register touch, but you release a very small amount of oxytocin, which is the bonding hormone.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
and people don't get that on porn. So keep
it
in mind.
Yes, absolutely.
And a lot of people just
it's
don't
a
get
real
that
stop.
In general.
The kiss goodbye.
Yeah.
I know. I love what you said about the expectation thing, because I think for a lot of, and let's use women in this example, but I'm sure this would apply to men as well. But for a lot of women, because sex is so interwoven with us psychologically, there's times where we are just not in that headspace. And if we've associated, kissing is going to lead to sex and I don't want to have sex right now, then you reject your partner's even non-sexual advances. Hugging and kissing is rejected, and that creates such a huge breakdown over time. So I think having that trust there where you can kiss without it leading to anything, ironically, is more likely to just lead to more sex in your relationship. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
And
I think that comes to the communication. If the couple can have a clear communication around that, you know, be very clear about what's going to lead to what, and what, and express your expectation. Like, what do you, especially for women, because we're not talking about our desires and how we like it. It's important to say, you know what? Just communicate it with me in a way that me and my body and my brain are prepared to receive it.
What are some tips on how to have that conversation?
Yeah, it's a really common thing that, you know, a couple come in, there's been no sex, and they stop kissing. Because a kiss to them means
leads
sex.
Absolutely.
Right? And so what we say is exactly that. Start talking about it. Like, actually have a session that's just kissing. No sex at all. Just kissing for the sake of kissing.
Yeah.
Right? And so then actually have tools in your toolbox that you can say, look, I'm happy to kiss tonight, but I really don't want to go any further. Are we okay with that?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Absolutely. Most
that's
people don't talk about it.
Yeah.
But kissing's really, there was a big study done, 70 countries in the world, around intimacy. And no matter where you live, there was this common thread between high intimacy and low intimacy. And one of the things high intimacy is people kiss often passionately for no reason at all. You have a lot
that.
Of intimacy.
Yeah.
And of course the opposite, when you don't have intimacy, you don't kiss.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a really common thing and we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? People generally don't talk
I
in
know,
relationships.
Yeah.
You have this narrative but no discussion. So,
well, it's such a taboo subject.
I was talking to Nisha before you come in. We were talking about what would you like, what we would like to ask you to speak about. And one of them that I was talking to Nisha about was the social role. That doesn't matter if you're a man or woman. Like, we are being told this is your role as a woman, as a man, as a father, as a mother. And lots of this sexual relationship and emotional intimacy, and I would say like being following, you know, your passion with eroticism, stuff like that, it change after, for example, they're getting married. Because they're going to a, you know, a social role. Now you're a married woman, now you're a married man,
you're a
mother,
mother
now.
Your sexuality takes
now.
A back seat.
So what are your thoughts about that? How important is actually, first of all, to keep that spice
Yeah, really important. I mean, it's alive. Also, yeah, and it's both men and women that have that.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of this, now that I'm a mother, I shouldn't be like, wild in the boudoir.
Yeah.
And then men have the Madonna complex. I love you too much just to get rough and go for it.
Oh, that is such a good point as well.
So you kind of have, I really love you.
You're my wife. I'm not going to do that. Yeah.
And then, so you kind of have both. So it's just communication, sitting down saying, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we all have this thing. It's this sexual script, right? It means how we think about sex based on how we were brought up, you know, our culture, religion, society, all of that decides where the furniture is in our head with sexuality, right? And we can move it, but most people don't talk about it to move it. And that one is saying, let's try and move the lounge.
Yeah.
It can be a little different, you know, in that intimate space. It doesn't mean that that's, you know, particularly for men, because I'm a feminist, I don't want to, you know, put it down, I want to objectify her. And often the partner's going, objectify her.
Yeah. In a safe space, it's so different. I trust you.
I want to have fun.
I can take you on, don't worry.
So it's a really interesting one, because there are these constructs, social constructs.
Yeah, social constructs.
I feel very lucky to have grown up in a generation where that's not as horrible. And like a culture where, because we're refugees, and you, Azita, you have a lot of Iranian clients and female Iranian clients and male Iranian clients that have so much shame-based trauma around sexual intimacy. And it would be very difficult to move that furniture, like you said, where we have to be like, no, it's like, you're allowed to have this desire and need.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we are human, you know, our brain has been structured for that. So if you say, I want more sex, it's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that in any age or any social role you are, but unfortunately people all of a sudden they change and then they go and go down the hill from there.
But you know, you can relate to them culturally as well in a way that they can probably really, you know, relate to, I think, which helps people. But you know, again, it's all our thought patterns, how we think, what the perception is, you know, and really we kind of, the power of our thoughts are incredible, as we all know.
Yeah.
And so if you're thinking one thing, you're just never going to come out of that until someone says, but what about when we move lunch? So yeah, well, conversation, therapy.
So
therapy, absolutely.
Therapy.
It's very important, because as Nusha, you just pointed out very nicely, there could be even generational trauma.
Absolutely.
People say, oh, I haven't been traumatized. You never know. It could be your mom, your grandmother, your father, and that trauma has been generationally transformed.
I'll never forget this. You might not even remember this. This was such a small conversation. I was, I think, 16 years old at the time. And we had some sexual education in school. You didn't receive that in Iran at all, other than if you have sex, you're going to die and go to hell. Which is not helpful. And I remember I was talking to you once about... I think it was masturbation, something to do with masturbation.
Oh, I remember that.
And I remember you saying, well, you were more uncomfortable about it than I was.
Understand.
You were much more uncomfortable about it than I was. And I remember now you would approach it so differently. At the time, we were so new to Australia, and you were still very much in that brainwashed, like, shame-based relationship to sex.
What did I tell you? You said go blind.
You said you can go blind, and you said also women shouldn't do that. Yes. And I was like, because you were like, it's not good for you. And I was like, well, guys do it all the time. And you're like, well, women shouldn't do it because it can make your like pH level bad, and it makes, you didn't say pH level. You said it can make your, you know, genitals smell, and it can give you issues. And I remember being like, you know, that's not true, right? And I remember you had this moment where you were like, but it is. And I was like, no, it's not. They told you that, but that's not true.
Yeah.
And oh my God, like, you were taught that by your mom, and she was taught that by her mother. Yeah, and we just have these generations of women being scared of our own bodies. And as Alinda said, we're top-down processing. So if you've got the psychological fear of your own body, then how are you going to get into it sexually, which is insane.
It was very interesting. I was reading this book. I can't remember her name, but it's Marriage in Captivity. Have you read that?
Yeah, yeah.
What's her name?
Who is that? I'll have to think of that in a minute. Yeah, I'll get there.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. She, in her book, she says, tell me how you were loved and cared.
Esther, it's Esther.
Yes,
one of Esther's books.
Yes, tell me how you were loved and cared when you were a child, and I will tell you how your sexual relationship is.
Yeah. Tell me how you were loved and I'll tell you how you love.
Yes.
Right? And so it's so true.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Exactly. Absolutely. So it's all go back. So it's not about.
And in a relationship, I imagine like each person would have a different experience of that, and that would impact their libido. And we were asking around, what are some questions we can ask today?
Right. Yeah.
So for a lot of couples where one person in the relationship has a higher libido and one person has a lower libido, what is the answer there? Because that is such a struggle for so many people. What is the middle ground where one person isn't sacrificing more than the other? Is there a way to navigate that?
Is it a myth or is it a way that they can increase their libido?
Yeah, so that's really common, right? Mm-hmm. Mismatched libido is really common. And you would have seen it and heard it, and people come in. There's usually a reason why something's happened.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually a context,
which
might be about expected pressure, which might be about performance for men, which might be about how they treat each other outside of that particular intimate space.
Yeah.
There's always a reason.
Okay.
But also it's important to know in any relationship, it ebbs and flows.
Yes.
There's times that, you know, you feel a bit more on track and then other times you're apart. But what I say is it's actually shouldn't be defined by sex and penetration. It should be how intimate you touch, you talk, you feel, and you have so much more than just this coital imperative, which heteronormative couples are terrible at. I have a lot of same-sex couples, and they're really great at navigating their intimacy in general.
Yeah.
They have to start talking about who's going to do what, right?
Mm.
So they don't just have this thing that heteronormative people have, is, you know, this particular genital goes in another.
Yeah.
They have... Mm. More dialogue around it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and it's really about that. It's about understanding, what is intimacy for you? Is it defined by an orgasm? Is it defined by penetration?
Mm.
Right? And once you do that, they've got a lot more to choose from. But it's also knowing that, you know, again, our brain is a really big part of it. If you're stressed, external stresses impact you, hormones impact it, you know? And so the kind of the short answer after that long explanation is you've got to ask them and unpack it.
Wow.
And often... alone with it. Not the partner in the room, you have a one-on-one with each of them, and they're far more open.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I also tell people, watch those microaggression that can build up, and then all of a sudden your partner is just
some guy
angry.
You know?
It's, and you ask them, what are you angry? They go, oh, I don't know, nothing happened. It did a little bit. Every day, something happened, you didn't talk about it, that accumulation of the microaggression, that you don't want to even look at your partner, you don't even touch me.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting, isn't it? And also the other thing about that is, it's also part of this sort of social construct, is there's a bit more tolerance of an angry man than an angry woman.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't there?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, it's just a bit grumpy, which is just crazy.
He's stressed by work. Yeah.
So that awareness is really...
So all of these can lead to people being more open to infidelity.
Yeah.
Or vulnerable to infidelity. Yeah, right.
And actually open to experience it. Like they go, I don't get what I need from home.
Yeah.
And we know, again, by research, that women are kind of catching up with men.
I think women have overtaken.
Not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet.
Let's get those numbers up.
Right? It's a bit like sex. If you ask females how often they have sex, they underreport. Ask men, they overreport. I reckon this is the same.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's very interesting.
So let's talk about that because that's becoming kind of a crisis.
Yeah.
And social media has made it so easy.
Exactly.
You can digitally cheat. You don't even have to cheat in person. You can get what you need.
That's right.
Infidelity.
And so that's it, right? What's cheating though? And that's a really important thing for couples to establish. What do you consider? Is it micro cheating or is it cheating? You know, is speaking to someone okay or isn't it? And the kind of rule that we have, and you would know this, Azita, is that anything you're sharing outside of your primary partner is a secret with someone else. That's an issue. You're sharing
the
stuff.
The moment you have to, you know what? People share the bed, shower.
Yeah.
They get naked in front of each other. They share the most, you know, intimate and private part of ourselves. We share it with our partner, and all of a sudden they go, "Oh, you're not allowed to have a passcode to my mobile."
Yeah. First sign.
First time.
Like, we're sharing everything. Mm-hmm. We're having sex with each other. It can't get any more intimate than that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, people don't want to share the password, don't want to say where I have been or what I've done.
Yeah.
That are, like, the moment your partner start hiding things and requesting, like, this is my space.
Yeah.
This is a alarm.
Secret.
This is a secret.
Speaking of warning signs, because you were saying that's like an early sign, what are some horsemen or some warning signs that you look out for that spell sort of dysfunction in intimacy and sex for couples, Linda?
Yeah, and so too much time on the phone is the first one. Distracted, not able to speak about the future.
Mm-hmm.
They won't talk to their partners about what are we doing in 3 months, 6 months,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they live very much now, but they're not talking about depth. They're talking about
surface level.
Yeah. But, you know, are you picking up the kids? What time? You know, did you buy milk? That conversation, which is functional, is predominantly what they're having. They're not having anything because they've got someone else they're being intimate with.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So verbally shows what's happening physically.
Yes.
And they can still be having sex with their primary partner.
Yeah.
But those that phone, I can't begin to tell you how many text messages I've had to read with people coming in.
Yes.
Look at this. Email
absolutely.
And so it's the number one thing, and it makes it easy to cheat. Before you had to pick up a phone, find a phone number, make a call. Message.
Wow.
Especially for men, it's easy. They can love their wife, and they're married.
Yeah.
Life and their children. Still.
And compartmentalize.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The sex.
Still
yeah.
have, you know, emotional.
And they're
and
raised. They're raised
with,
to
with
view that
women.
As very.
That's
old.
Different for women, though. Like women, they can't be happy at home and have, you know, affair outside.
Yeah.
So that's very important. What you said to. This particular tips is for women. Listen to your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Your intuition tells you something is off.
Yeah.
You know, even the kisses, the cuddles. Sometimes the infidelity actually can lead to more sex at home as well.
I have heard this.
Yeah.
That's very fascinating.
Yes.
It makes the partner is happier. They're in a better mood because they're getting this intimacy elsewhere. And then the whole relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching Sopranos
and that's
Sopranos a lot.
And definitely never say never. I've heard that, you know,
nicest,
my partner would
sweetest,
never
Yes. Have you experienced that? Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't even have one inkling.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, my friends, poor things, that must be awful, it never happened to me. And I used to say, aren't we lucky?
Mm. Oh, my God.
So, you know what? Looks like a rat, smells like a rat, any sign.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? But
yeah.
I think I knew. I just didn't want to
there
hear
is
it.
Always, everyone always says that. They go, in hindsight, there were signs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's always signs. But people, you know, ignore it because they want to ignore it.
Mm.
Yeah.
They are not ready to hear the truth.
Yeah, I didn't
want to. We made a video about micro cheating recently on our Instagram, and it blew up. Blew up. And
really?
Some people were very triggered by the content. And we were talking about, it was a researcher, and he was talking about the cup of coffee syndrome, where they were researching infidelity in couples. And this one researcher was like, wow, I've been studying people at work, co-workers who are of the same sexual orientation, who are not single, who have the same coffee break every day together.
Yeah. They have their coffee break
really?
Together.
And that becomes a ritual of intimacy.
Yeah.
It starts off so innocent.
So
they're sharing, they're connecting,
yeah.
and then suddenly they start comparing that relationship to their partner, and then that can turn into... we put that video out and people were very upset and people were like, wow, we can't even
have friends.
Co-workers and can't have coffee with a co-worker anymore and we have to police what our partner does. And it was actually not about controlling your partner at all. It was about self-regulation.
Yeah.
If monogamy is a value for you, then maybe be careful of these little pitfalls where...
Not go to the mine, you know, field.
Yeah.
To me, that is like a minefield. And if you go, you're not careful. We are human.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
We are human. We love that fuzzy, warm feeling that someone actually paying attention to
shiny
us.
Shiny light, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did I put you on pedestal and says like, wow, you're amazing. You're so kind. You're this, you're that.
Yeah.
And that coworker at work, obviously, is someone that you share space with.
Yeah.
You share a project with.
Yeah.
You know, you have something to talk about.
Already.
Mm.
Intellectually, probably same level as well. If you're an engineer and she's an engineer, you know, that's, you kind of have more to share.
Yeah.
And giving each other that space to, you know, talk about your dreams.
Yeah.
Talk about, oh, I'm working to get that promotion, for example.
Yeah, and you have that in common.
Absolutely.
But also, you can be anything for a snippet of time, can't you?
Absolutely.
Be the perfect person in an affair.
So chill and so different to your
wife.
Yeah.
That's another Esther Perel thing that she sort of says, you know, the one commonality with anyone who's been in any kind of liaison outside their primary one is you ask them why and they say, I loved how I felt. I loved who I became.
Yeah. Absolutely. Especially digital affairs. Because you become this most generous person online. Because you don't have to do anything. You don't have to move.
I wish I could take
you
to Paris right now.
Yes, you can take someone to Paris.
Exactly.
Funny,
and
it?
No physical activity.
Mm.
Of course, people... love it. You know, you can be one person with one girl you're chatting or a boy. You can be another person with and become that intellectual, poetic, romantic.
Draw, doesn't it, for some people?
And absolutely.
The key, I think, is having those boundaries in place so that your partner can't be like, well, I didn't know that you would have an issue with me private messaging women online as friends. You know, we're just friends or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just friends?
Yeah, you have to be
I personally don't, and I know this is probably not the most politically correct thing, but I don't think men and women can be just friends. I think men and women can form friendships, but it's never 100% platonic.
It has to have lots of boundaries.
Yeah.
You can.
It can be a surface level, but not.
You can have a friend as male. However, if there is a sexual attraction, very dangerous, very dangerous.
But if
it's not sexual attraction, you still have to have boundaries around that friendship.
Mm.
It's very difficult, though.
It's
very
hard.
Difficult.
I mean,
it's
really hard emotionally not to. And again, I always have that rule. Are you sharing things really as a secret and feeling better in that space? It's a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also think monogamy is not a normal state to be in.
Yeah.
Right? We've adapted to it.
Yeah.
It's a daily choice.
Yeah.
Right? I choose to be monogamous myself every single day because that's my agreement in my marriage.
Yeah.
Right? But lots of people don't, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Mm. But, you know, you kind of have to decide if you're going to, then that's it. And then that has real boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, I don't put myself in situations that my husband would feel insecure. I don't know.
Absolutely.
He doesn't put himself in situations that would make me feel like that.
Because it's so hard to come back from that. And if couples have experienced something like that or any breach of trust in their relationship, I imagine that would really impact their intimacy.
So that platonic relationship, if you ever have to take it, as you said, Linda, secret, all of a sudden hide your meeting with your friend.
Why?
That's a sign. If you start fantasizing about this friend and thinking about, oh my god, you know, it would have been nice if, you know, we could, that's also a danger zone. So when that relationship goes into your head, which is all the infidelity start from that imagination, It's that friendship is not... Right? Yes.
And I mean, that's it. Because at that point, you stop investing in your primary relationship because your energy is going outside. Right?
Yeah.
And that's where you're in trouble. But you, it's a real choice. But everyone is different, what they want.
Mm.
You need to be really clear off the bat.
Yeah.
This is, my current husband was one. And my previous husband cheated, not my current, just FYI.
So, you know. Husband number one.
Yes. And I love that the word current implies that that can change at any time.
No.
Keep him on his toes. Yeah, exactly.
When I'm about to introduce Andrew, sometimes I go, my second husband. That means, like, is this going to be a terrible fort?
Yeah.
I know, but you try and give context.
Yeah, funny. Absolutely.
I just thought I'd
put
that in. This one, this... order just
No, I assumed the first husband is no longer with us.
No, he's very good friends.
Yeah.
Very good. It's all very amicable. Hopefully it happens, right?
Yes, it does happen.
Well,
and how important it is, actually, in this subject, it's important not all relationship has to work and not all relationship will work. Even, you know, some people think, oh, if you go to therapy, it will be, that's it, it will work. No, the therapy is actually will give you the confidence to make a decision that, okay, it's time to leave that marriage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or
point?
That relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's not always, it's
mm-hmm.
not, it doesn't have to be.
But and 20s are different to 30s, 40s, 50s, right?
Yeah.
20s, your personality is still forming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you're very different 30, 40, 50. So
mm-hmm.
that's when the fractures happen too, is they drift apart.
Yeah.
So, you know, just because you marry someone doesn't mean they're forever.
Yeah,
so.
Forever.
And for couples that are experiencing that drift for whatever it is, whether it's infidelity or whether it's some other external factor, job, stress,
age,
whatever it is, and there's been a break in intimacy, what is just some ways that people can reignite that passion?
After therapy?
Therapy, absolutely.
Slowly, right?
Okay.
It's slow, so it starts with sit closer on the lounge, spend more time together, go and have fun, laugh,
mm-hmm.
you know, like actually hold hands. And then maybe you just kind of have a bit of a cuddle. So slowly you kind of, because you can't go from nothing to everything. That's just weird.
Yeah.
Right? And so you kind of go progressively. And then you feel a little more trusted, I guess, in the partner. You have higher trust. So it's slow.
Mm. Yeah.
And then you kind of have a conversation around, you know, where does that go? And if we're not ready to go that next step, how do we use, you know, communication techniques to not offend the other person so they're not rejected?
Yeah.
But it's slow, you know, and it should be slow.
What is one thing you wish everyone knew? If you could just put this out there in every textbook, that would help so many people. What is something you wish more people knew about relationships and intimacy? I know it's difficult to narrow down.
No, well, this kind of relationships, I could say 1,000 different things.
Mm-hmm.
And communication, learn how to communicate, learn to actually have boundaries around when
mm-hmm.
you're getting flooded, all that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But sex is really simple.
Mm-hmm.
People don't talk about it. Never in relationships. They really struggle to talk about a problem because it's a bit awkward. There's a lot of shame around things that might happen.
Yeah.
So if you can just like ease that pressure and talk, and that might mean having, you know, a therapist help you do it, but that shifts because anything that happens sexually, you've got a narrative going on, your partner, and no one's talking.
Mm.
And that's whether you're heterosexual, same sex, I don't care.
Yeah, it applies to
everyone. And sex can repair any... you know, if you had a fight with your partner, then a sex can repair what
it is
happened.
A very good palate cleanser.
Yeah, we release all those lovely...
Absolutely. You know. I always tell my clients that sex is... So imagine if your life is a puzzle.
Yeah.
And you put everything next to each other. The work, the kids, the relationship, the family, everything.
Yeah.
Every part of you.
Mm-hmm.
Sex is the last piece of puzzle. If it's not there, which we can see in a lot of relationships, they still stay married. They raise their children, they have. But when you look at that picture, you still cannot, something is missing.
Yeah. Mm.
You still cannot hang that picture on the wall and say...
Because it's dysfunctional, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. So the numbers around that are good too, right? So a holistic model of a relationship, sex is only 20% of that. It's now, if you remove sex and you don't have sex, it flips over and it becomes 80% dysfunctional.
Mm.
Yes.
Right? That is so fascinating.
And that's a big one. So while you're having sex, doesn't matter if you're having it once a month or you're having it, you know, every day. Mm. You're having intimacy, it's fine. It's functional. You remove it, it's dysfunctional.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? You're meant to be intimate with your intimate partner.
Yeah.
And so 80% dysfunction.
Mm. You said something very interesting about how for heterosexual couples especially, but I'm sure this applies to everyone, there is this quota that they have in their head that they're supposed to reach. Is that... Does that exist, or is it completely different for every couple? Or is there, would you say, a general number that people should aim for a healthy relationship?
Yeah, everyone always has this idea of what's normal.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Should we do? And we don't know because people, you know, under or overestimate.
Mm. Mm.
But I always say once a week there should be some form of intimacy. And that doesn't have to be
penetrative sex. Yeah.
That can be a cuddle. That can be a kiss. That can be, you know, like a shower together. That can be a massage. Something should be happening each week that allows you to feel what's different about this person here to everyone else I see during the day. But number-wise is really varied. Some people want sex every day. Some people want once a month.
Mm.
You know, like everyone's really, really different.
And if you've got a partner that wants to have sex 5 times a week and another partner that wants to have sex once a week, is that an issue?
Yeah.
Communication.
Should you be basing your relationship on matching understandings of that, or can it just be navigated around?
It usually is one person wanting a connection for a reason, right?
Yeah. Anxiety?
Yeah.
Insecurity?
Regulation. Men like to be intimate to feel emotionally connected.
Yeah.
Women want to feel emotionally connected before they're
intimate.
To be
wanted. Yeah.
Two totally different paths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So somewhere in the middle, you know, like really no one meets their perfect kind of libido match in life.
Mm.
I think it's always...
You find a way to,
You find ways. But, you know, it's never really the orgasm that people are chasing.
Yeah.
It's the emotion.
Connection, yeah.
It's the connection.
Wow.
Feeling desired and all that kind of stuff.
So if that huge mismatch is, you know, appeared, I would say, yeah, therapy is definitely helping because it could be just anxiety.
Other issues.
Yeah. Could be other issues. Could be, you know, there's something there is. And the more the other person wants it, the other person will push.
Yeah.
That's happened to me
and it goes
in
back
a relationship. I had a long time.
I felt suffocated.
Yeah. It was awful. And we ended up going to therapy, but I wish we had gone to a therapist that had an emphasis on like a psychosexual therapy understanding because we, and that was a same sex relationship.
Mm.
And I think in one regard, it's easier because you understand each other. But in another regard, when it's two women, there's not one person driving.
Yeah.
Whereas with men, it's like clockwork. So it's very easy for that to just be like someone's there to, you know, instigate
in your
it.
Schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
So there used to be that, it's kind of been disproven now, but lesbian deadbed used to be a big thing that you know, say
that was definitely an experience for me. Yeah.
Right? And so that deadbed syndrome, you know, became a really big thing that, if you're in a same sex female relationship, you get the deadbed after a while. Well, they worked out. It was just really, there wasn't anyone who was willing to step up because actually we can step aside and we don't really need it as much as what men probably do.
Yeah.
Mm.
That we can put it into a different category and please ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We use our brain, you were saying at the beginning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We prioritize
you
love
men a lot. No, they're great. They're amazing.
That's two women together, just as men, same-sex men are the opposite because they often have open relationships.
Yeah.
And they have sex for the physical side, not the emotional side.
Oh my God, my gay guy friends will be at a lunch and they'll be like, hey, I'll be back. 20 minutes. I thought they were going to the post office. No. They're going to go hook up and come back.
Yeah.
And they are able to have that transactional relationship to
turn
sex
on,
that
off,
I just don't think
on,
women... I don't think women are wired that
they,
way.
They're trying...
Yeah.
Like, polyamory is really only increase in sort of lesbian community, but man, it's complex.
For men, polyamory.
Sex women right now, polyamory is big. Let's have it open, but boy, it's just like...
Polyamory is a nightmare for me personally.
Yeah.
I cannot.
Yeah. It's really hard. It's so hard to navigate.
Yeah.
But men do it beautifully. And so part of my practice, at least, is navigating their contract. What's our deal here?
Mm-hmm.
What are you allowed to do?
Yeah.
You can meet someone on a Sunday night between 7 and 10.
Yeah.
And bring them to the house. Make it quick. Don't want to hear about them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
To, let's pick someone together. Let's
pick
them up. So they're just more open talking about it. because it's not emotional.
Fascinating.
Yeah. It is fascinating. So it really comes back to communication, putting it on the table with your partner, especially if you're a woman listening to this podcast. Put it on the table, ladies. Don't be ashamed, because and being aware of if that you're feeling ashamed talking about your sexual needs and desire, it's, you know, it has roots in your culture and background. That's fine. Put it to the side, because it's your life as well. It's your partner. You kind of coming together for, you know, the first reason is you want to make each other feel wanted and loved and care for. So it's important to talk to your partner.
Yeah.
What do you want? What I want? Mm-hmm. Let's work.
And you can turn it
to
something really big inside, right? You can just like ruminate and it's awful, but you get it out. It's like, oh,
it's not that bad. Yeah.
And it might be an alternate.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Talking and having the courage.
Yeah.
That first step.
And for some people, it's like pulling their teeth out. They cannot talk about it. So I said, how about first time you write it down? What do you want to happen in bed?
Yeah.
Write it down.
Yeah.
And that's just for you. You don't have to share it with anyone.
Mm.
But practice expressing
your
what
needs.
You want,
mm-hmm.
your needs. So, and read that rehearsal a few times. And then take it to your partner and talk to your partner about
it.
It's
great.
And get therapy.
And the
get therapy.
Do we mention
therapy?
Yes.
Get
have
therapy.
We mentioned that? Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. And if you're listening and you've got any more questions for Alinda, you can reach out to her on her website, alindasmall.com, A-L-I-N-D-A, small, spelt the normal way. Thank you so much
for having me.
And send us any more requests or recommendations. You can jump on our website, theprojectofyou.com.au, or reach out to us on social media.
Absolutely. Looking forward to hear from you guys.
See you next time.
See you next time.